This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine.
The music you made holds so much relevance today, almost 70 years later. And in looking at the civil rights issues that we're dealing with, and what, I'm going to turn this a little bit, what are your hopes for the near future?
I hope that people focus on one central thing, is that race and questions around race really determine everything that happens in the USA and always has. We started right out massacring literally millions of natives, Americans, who were here before we came. And we started right out. We brought the guns and the swords and just eliminated them as fast as we could. Then we brought in people who were enslaved from Africa, made them work in, under horrible conditions for many years, and nobody wants to be owned by someone else. That seems impossible. But that's what we live by, you know. We did that. And all of that is in our background, right? Mm-hmm. So now there is a tendency to ignore that and kind of like, oh, yeah, we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, no, we're still not free. We're not free. I'm not free. I'm a white American woman. But I'm not free because race is all around me, or the questions of race. I know that there are, you know, for example, hungry people right down a mile from here. People, because of race, are not able to have their needs met. They can't buy a house because of historical, you know, I mean, white people could always buy a house if they had any kind of pocket money. But there's been all this redlining and all manipulation of property and stuff. So that black people, you know, don't have that inheritance. Have to keep in mind that the inequity that the country is based on has not gone away, has not gone away. And that's why, you know, the jails are full of black men to a larger percent by far than it is of any other racial group. So anyway, my hope is that, you know, people will accept those things and get rid of the guilt. We don't have to sit around and feel guilty and terrible and all that. We have to actually think, what can we do to move forward and cleanse ourselves of any traces of a sense of superiority because of skin color, or all that is built into white people's background, and we need to cleanse ourselves of that. We're not superior, not at all. That's one of my great hopes, of course, is that we understand that, and we take personal responsibility and work on it inside ourselves, outside ourselves, in our community, everywhere. Now, there's a whole lot more I could say, but, you know, That's a main thing.
Well, I'll ask you one more question on that note. Do you have any frustration about how we're still dealing with a lot of the same similar issues 70 years later, 50 years later?
Yeah, I do, because I think I started out young understanding that organization was kind of the key to changing anything, that getting together with other people and making kind of a little pact between you to work on certain things and doing it together, that's what changes anything. To have a way to organize so that people come to conclusions of what they're going to do by some kind of consensus, and then everyone agrees to do it. That's kind of internal discipline in an organization. Okay, I may not be the one who brought that up. You brought it up. I didn't agree with you at first, but now we've all agreed to do it. Okay, I'm going to follow that direction because I'm in this organization, you know, and I will do it anyway. And then things happen because you're working in unison. You have a plan, right? So that's what really comes out of having some kind of a, you know, it used to be a political party. Now it can take various forms. People are thinking of new things all the time. That, some kind of central organization, some kind of a recognition of the need for leadership, encourage the leadership, support them, challenge them, criticize them, become them, all that. That's my frustration. Yeah. I want to see people accept that kind of a mode of looking at the problem. King.
But when the shadowy sun sets on the one who fired the gun, you'll see by his name
On the stone that remains, his epitaph lay. Only a pawn in the game.
So I'm going to butter your buns a little bit here, Barbara.
Okay.
You, throughout your career, you built amazing relationships. You made incredible music. You maintained a low profile. You raised a family. You started a record label, the Paradon Records, with your late husband, Erwin Silber. The label produced 50 albums over 12 years, which you produced, and you are like the original badass woman. I just think I've read so many comments about the Vegas agent who wouldn't let you play with, was it Duke Ellington's band?
Duke Ellington's bass player, who was my bass player. He wouldn't let me include him in a band I was going to front for Las Vegas.
Because it would have been
and
a mixed band.
He said, oh, no, those Texas high rollers wouldn't buy that. You can't do it. So I said, kiss my, you know what. I literally did and walked out right on the spot.
I think you actually used a little worse language than that. But I mean, what was it like to be a woman, I guess specifically with the producing, how you produced all of those albums? What was it like to be a woman on the other side of the microphone and on the other side of the business in that era?
I never thought of it that way because all of it was resulting directly from my own work. I'd go somewhere and sing at some in some country and meet the singers who were being produced by the movements. But singers like me come out of movements. I came out of a movement. Everybody does that are activists and or supported by a movement. Wait a minute, I lost my train of thought just for a second there. What did I say?
Did you feel inhibited because you were, I mean, I don't feel like, just from what I've read about you, I don't feel like you were inhibited.
No, I didn't see any reason to be. I mean, right. There was a lot of, there's always the social norms are acting to kind of put up barriers, and you see it, oh, okay, so-and-so thinks he can put one over on me because I'm a woman. Well, he can't. Mm-hmm. I would meet these other singers and start to ask them if there's a way I could make some of their music available to my own country. This country was so xenophobic. It's bad now. It was even worse back then. People would, like, I'd sing a song in another language on a program. People would come up to me, why did you do that? You know, why did you put that language in there? The xenophobia was almost as bad as the racism. I mean, as bad. So I really wanted people to hear the voices coming from those people in different countries and different situations and hear the voices of these people themselves. And it just was a very big motivation. And actually, you know what else I learned? I didn't go to college. I'm a totally, ragamuffin as far as as far as education. I used to skip school and go down to the old dusty used bookstores to get my reading done, and nobody could tell me what to read or how much to read or why I should read or anything else. When it came down to that, putting these out, I used a model, a little bit of the Folkways model, because I used to put these booklets out with some information, maybe the lyrics of the songs and whatever. But I wanted the booklets to be very, very informative, and it turned out that I could get very well-informed people to write an essay about whatever. Let's say it's a Haitian situation. Okay, somebody from Haiti will write this thing about. I could find, you know, because I was always roaming around in the political arena, I could always find people who knew a lot about a certain area. So I got the booklets have a. You can download them, by the way. You don't have to pay or anything. You can open them and download them or read them online. But they're really informative. They'll have an essay about the country, the situation, the struggle, about the musicians, what are they up against, what are they doing. Here's their songs, right beside the words in Creole or Spanish or whatever. Right beside that will be the English version, poetic but not singable, you know, just translations that I oversaw and learned how to do a lot. And then always ending up with, how can I get involved? If this music moves me, you know, and I want to do something about it, how can I get involved? So we had contact numbers and things at the end. Mm-hmm. So check those out. It's worth a trip into Paradon land. It really, it's kind of overwhelming, even for me. That's how, in a way, I educated myself about those movements and the people involved and the struggles of things they're up against. And
You and Irwin then donated the entire catalog from Peridon to Smithsonian Folkways in 91.
Yes.
And that Smithsonian Folkways is how we found you. So I just want to thank you again so much, Barbara, for talking with me. I want to thank you for your music. I think that you are a voice that everyone needs to hear. And I've loved covering it, and I've loved this album, and I've loved digging into your catalog. You're just an amazing woman, and I'm so thankful to be interviewing you and having you on New Music.
Well, thank you for asking me, and again, hello, and lots of love to all those northerners up there that I would love to know in person, but well, it's too late now. I can't get there.
That's okay.
You'll have to come to Oakland.
And we'll continue playing your music here on KAXE KBXE.
Well, great. And that's good luck to the stations. Stay in people's ears forever.
Well, if you lose your money, please don't lose your mind. Please don't lose your mind. If you lose your money, please don't lose your mind. Please don't lose your mind. And if you lose